I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
Hello, and welcome back to the Functional Nerds Podcast. Your hosts are Patrick Hester and John Anilio.
That's right. I like this. That's nice. That's a kind of
That's what it would sound like if we were on NPR.
Yeah. Well, we should start recording everything like this. Then maybe we can get on NPR and quit our day jobs.
This is Functional Nerds Podcast, as brought to you by WGBC in Boston.
It's interesting with podcasts because I feel like they go through periods where they sort of become within the public consciousness, and then they sort of fall out a little bit, and then they come back, but now they're a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And like one of my friends on Facebook was like, I just discovered podcasts. Like, who would like to recommend some podcast? And I was like, I've been podcasting for like 7 years, 8 years. And we're not even the early. There's like lots of people that did it before us. But yes. So it's,
we have longevity.
We have longevity, but
we haven't done the podcast fade.
Yeah, but we're nowhere near the earliest. There are lots of people who are still doing it who started way before us. So I do not claim to be a pioneer in the field at all.
But there are also people who started after us who have now gone away.
Oh, you know, sure.
It just happens. It just happens. But when I leaned in and I did the soft talking, it also reminded me of that Saturday Night Live skit with Alec Baldwin and Anna Gasteyer. And I forget who the third person was, but where he's essentially sitting there like, yes, my balls, you know, I sell them and people really seem to enjoy them. Would you like to try my balls?
I would
love to try your balls.
Yeah, Bill Schwede. Yeah. Schwede balls. Yeah. Balls. Yeah. That's classic sketch, man. it is interesting because I think one of the reasons why I know you and I were both early adopters in terms of listeners of people who listen to podcasts. I know I was in on those first couple of rounds of early podcasting where you had to, there weren't really many topics. It was a lot of tech focused stuff because it was, tech people were amongst the first people to do podcasts, but now there's lots and lots. So it does kind of crack me up when people are just sort of discovering it now. Cause I've been sort of ringing that bell for, 7, 8 years, not even to promote our podcast, but just to kind of promote podcasts in general. I'm just like, why would you ever listen to a commercial on the radio ever again? Like, why would you ever listen to any of this ever again? You have the power to listen to anything that there is a podcast on any subject that you can imagine, and whatever you're into, you can find 10 podcasts about it. So yeah, I don't know.
You won't have to listen to ads or anything, which does bring us to our next bit, which is today's podcast is brought to you by Acme products. Acme. Yeah, when you're trying to catch a roadrunner, use Acme.
Yeah, I should say that there are plenty of podcasts that have ads as well. So maybe the avoiding of ads isn't the biggest selling point of podcasts, because you do have to sit through some of them. But you can fast forward. Unless you're driving, then I wouldn't recommend doing that. But because a couple of the podcasts I listen to do have, relatively heavy advertising on it. There's a couple that I listen to that are through Podcast One, which is this big podcast network. And they, because they're a network, none of those podcasts do like the Patreon thing like we do. They just have ads, and that's it. How about you, Bob?
I didn't need to throw it out there, John, that John Anilio's opinions are not necessarily those that the network or the podcast or the Functional Nerd sponsors share. They are wholly his own. No, just kidding.
Yeah. I'm curious, Pat. Do you listen to many podcasts these days? Are there any sort of regular? No, you don't. Not at this point.
I just have not had the bandwidth to listen to that many podcasts. I listen to Beyond the Trope. I listen to the Three Horsemen when I get a chance. Theirs tends to be a little bit longer. So it takes several listens to kind of get through them. I will listen to Sword and Laser when I get a chance. But for the most part, like the only one I'm religious about anymore is Beyond the Trope, just because they're fun, you know, and
yeah, they're friends too.
And they're friends and they're young writers and they're trying to, you know, get their stuff out there, and there's an energy to them, and I just enjoy it.
Yeah, podcasts are, I listen to more, or maybe not more, but I used to listen, I used to devote more hours to listening to podcasts. A lot of that time has been replaced by audiobooks now
yeah,
that
I have an Audible account and everything. Yeah.
And I'd sort of prefer that. I'd rather knock out a book than pod, but I still listen to a fair amount of them. The ones that I'm currently listening to in terms of kind of every week, Chord Killers, I still listen to every week. I just really like what Tom Arrett and Brian Brush would do on that show. And it's relevant to my interest and they have a nice form and I really dig that show. And, I listen to Eddie Trunk's podcast, the guy that was on That Metal Show. He's got a podcast every week where he interviews, you know, hard rock and heavy metal people. So that's obviously, he's Eddie Trunk, in addition to being on That Metal Show for all those years, he's been a DJ for like 30 years. So he's got it down, you know, he's a pro, like he knows, you know, so his sound quality is really good and his, you know, he knows how to do an interview.
Well,
so,
and John, I mean, I know people have complained before about our sound quality, but I don't really think that there's any issues anymore with our sound quality as we're going forward. You know, I mean, everything's been great.
Yeah, I know.
Gareth. That was for you.
Yeah. Well, his sound quality is good, but he has a lot of people, a lot of his guests are over the phone. So, you know, their quality isn't always great.
Yeah, it's like, that's like a holdout to radio programs, because the most radio programs still do phone call stuff. And quality is not that great.
Well, in his, a lot of, in the past 6 months or so, he started, Eddie Trunk started doing a Sirius XM show. And there must have been a lot of like wheelings and dealings that went on with that, because his podcast now, over the past 6 months, has been, maybe not even that long, has been interviews from his Sirius show. So Podcast One and Sirius, I don't know if they're the same company or if they're in bed together, but apparently they're okay with him taking content from the Sirius show and putting it on his podcast, because that's all of his interviews are from that now too. So I'm sort of curious.
I've noticed that like local, what's left of local radio now puts out what they call podcasts, which is essentially like they broadcast as normal and they record it and then they put it out as something you can stream or download, and they call it a podcast, which technically it is, but at the same time it's just like their radio show.
Yeah But you know, so those are the two that I kind of list every week. It's funny, a few weeks ago I picked the AirPods as my pick of the week, and I notice I'm actually, because of these, I'm actually getting through more podcasts, because these are so, sound so good and they're so comfortable in the ear and they're so easy to kind of get things going, that I just find myself throwing them in whenever I have a few couple minutes or whatever. And, you know, whatever I'm doing, whether I'm doing the dishes or what have you, I just toss them in there. And then a lot of times that's, you know, instead of an audio book where I want to concentrate a little bit on it, I'm kind of getting through my podcast a little bit more, which is nice, because I'm subscribed to a lot that I don't listen to every week. Mm. You know, if it's got a guest that I like, I'll listen to it. But if it's someone I'm not as interested in, I probably let it go. So I don't know if you're like that with your podcast, where you're subscribed to a bunch that you kind of never listen to.
Yeah.
I think that happens to a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, because you find out about all these good ones and then you're like, that's cool. And then you're subscribed to 10, but you only really listen to like three of them.
So one of the things that I do as part of the editing for Functional Nerds is I take our raw file and I edit it down, and it's a multi-track file. And then eventually I get it down to a single layer file that I save as an MP3. I then open that MP3 inside of iTunes to put all the tags on it that you have to put in for iTunes, right? Because you can just basically open the file and do the get info, and you can put all the iTunes tags in there, and then you save the file, and then that's the file that I upload and put into the feed, which then, you know, iTunes delivers to people, and it has all the tags and stuff on there. Anyway, so that's part of my process, and every week when I do that, my iTunes starts to clog a little bit as it's downloading. Like, I subscribe to tons of podcasts that I have just subscribed to over the years. I just don't get time to listen to them anymore. And iTunes will start downloading them when I'm doing those tags on the post or on the MP3 file. So I'll sit there and I'll try to close iTunes and it's like, iTunes is downloading 473 podcasts. Are you sure you want to stop right now? And I'm like, mm-hmm. No, go ahead.
Oh yeah, I forgot. In the early days of podcasts, yeah, you would download it to iTunes mm-hmm. on your computer, yeah. And then you would put your iPod. You would connect it with the USB cable. I forgot. Man, I know that I was an early adopter.
I still subscribe in iTunes because sometimes I just listen on my laptop.
Yeah. Wow, I totally forgot about that. I haven't thought about that in a long time. It's like it was a lot of effort to do that. Now it's so easy because I think a lot of people don't even download them to their phone. A lot of times they just stream them. Yeah. Sometimes I always download them anyway, but
just depends on your device and how much space you have and how much data you have and all that kind of stuff, you know, on how you want to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy. I totally forgot about that. But
there's a part of me that still likes to have a physical copy of something, like even a digital copy. Mm-hmm. I still like to have that because, you know, Fred Kish has told the story many times of, you know, he's always been an early adopter of ebooks. And, mm-hmm. you know, he had a platform and he had 1,000 books or something on there that he had bought, and then the platform went away and all the books went away. Mm-hmm. You know, so
yeah,
I've learned from those kinds of horror stories, and I like to have some sort of digital, like even my Audible books. I download my Audible books to iTunes and I save mm-hmm. them out as an audio file so that I always have mm-hmm. that backup copy in case, you know, something ever goes and Audible decides to pull my books.
Yeah, it's true. I will say this. I had an experience recently. So I use Google Play Music for my streaming these days, and I really like it. So I've gone through 3 different streaming services now. I started with Spotify, then I switched over to Apple Music, and now I use Google Play Music, and they all have pretty much the same catalog. And, you know, but I seem to like Google Play Music the best right now. And Google Play Music lets you upload your library of your own files, like whatever sort of CDs you ripped over the years. And a problem that I had was while I was trying to free up some space on my computer, I accidentally deleted one of my libraries. I deleted the Folk Library from my iTunes. I don't know why I did it. Like it was a total accident. I didn't mean to, but I did. And the problem with a lot of that stuff, a lot of what I labeled as folk was from back in the day when I was performing as a folk singer songwriter. And this is something that maybe not a lot of people would understand. I shouldn't put it that way. That's dismissive. But my experience at the time was when you were playing these kinds of gigs, doing original singer songwriter music, you would end up doing gigs with people a lot. Cause you'd be playing, with other singer songwriters, so you play different coffee shops and there'd be like these songwriter in the rounds nights and or open mics and all that kind of stuff. So I met a lot of great singer songwriters, a lot of great people. And what the thing to do was, the good etiquette was, if you had a CD out, which most people did, if you were taking it seriously, you probably recorded an album and you sold it at your gigs or what have you. If you were doing a gig with somebody, you'd be like, hey man, here's my album. You would give your album to your colleagues, and they would give you their album. So I had a ton of albums from friends that I did gigs with. And some of those albums are very meaningful to me because they're from that period of time, which is like 15 years ago now. And these weren't big successful albums. They were people that, you know, maybe they did a little bit of touring, but like as sort of the writing community that we know, most of them had day jobs and they did this to a certain extent, but it captures that bit of time for me because I listened some of these albums I ended up really liking. Unfortunately, some of those albums, those folks, never got around to putting them up on the digital platforms. Mm. So they're not on Spotify. Mm. They're not on Apple Music. So when I'm like, oh, I'll just go find all this stuff. And it's like, nope. So fortunately, and I'm like, oh, that's a bummer. And I haven't gotten around to doing it yet. But fortunately, I still actually have the physical CDs for most of those people. So, but I have to go back now and I got to like rip them again. And then I got to upload it to Google Play and it's a big pain, but I'm glad I have the backups. Cause if I like just, you know, donated all those CDs, then I would just be shit out of luck because they just don't exist. So I understand the having a physical copy of things. I tend to get rid of most of my physical copies nowadays,
most people do.
Well, I don't have the space. Yeah, for
I mean, that's the thing, you know, you look at my basement. My basement is a mess because of all the shit that I have. You know, I've got a cabinet full of DVDs, and people go, "Why do you keep those?" And I'm, because I can't. I just can't. Yeah. You know, there's stuff on there that if I wanted to stream it, I'd have to pay again to stream it. You know.
Yeah.
And it's annoying to me. Like I don't know.
One of the things that comes up on Cord Killers, a particular service. Now, I think it would be a decent amount of effort on your part, but there is a service called Plex. I don't know if you are familiar with Plex. Okay, so Plex, and there's probably other things too, but this is the one that comes up on Cord Killers a lot. It is a service that, so now, the legality of this,
as John makes air quotes on the video.
Yes, it's somewhat questionable. And anytime it comes up on Cord Killers, you know, Tom is always brings up that, well, technically you're not really supposed to do this, but you do own the DVD. So, and it's not like you're sharing it with other people. But the basic idea is this: you rip all your DVDs onto a hard drive. And then what Plex allows you to do is you upload them to whatever their service is. And then you then have access to all of your ripped DVDs that you then stream over your Roku player or what have you. So it's a way to put your library essentially in the cloud without having to access your DVDs. Yeah,
there used to be, again, and I'm gonna also put air quotes up because I'm not sure about the legality of this is probably not actually there. But on Mac, there used to be, and I don't know if it's still around, there was a piece of software called Handbrake?
Yes, Handbrake. That's what they mentioned that, because with Plex, that's what you're supposed to use. You use Handbrake, that then, well,
and
yeah.
Handbrake was this thing that would, you put your DVD in, and then it would rip it out and create AVIs or MP4s or something like that, that you can then have all your stuff digitally. And yeah, it's just, you know, like any of those kinds of things. Like I remember you used to be able to rip your CDs in iTunes. I don't know if you still can.
Mm-hmm. I think
like,
so.
There were people like John Mayer who didn't like that. And so they would put things on their CDs.
DRM,
to make it, and actually the DRM you could still get around. It was things like what was his first? Was it his first or his second CD?
Room for Squares. Room for Squares. Because I had
an additional secret, like 200 tracks on it. And so what would happen is when iTunes started trying to rip it, there was a limit to how many tracks it could rip, and so when it hit these secret tracks, it would then die because it couldn't get past all of these hundreds of secret tracks that were on the thing. And so, you know, there was shit like that. But yeah, Handbrake, I remember because someone had told me about that a long time ago, and that was supposed to be, you know, a way to rip your DVDs. I have no idea if it worked well or not.
I never used it. It always seemed like too much
that's
work.
That's my
to
thing.
Me.
It does. It seems like, you know, it's like my mom has boxes of photographs, and I remember we started the project of scanning those photos, and you know, after a couple of hours of doing that, you're just sitting there going, I would rather be at the dentist right now than, you know, getting drilled in the mouth and the tooth than sitting here scanning photos anymore.
Yeah, it's funny that you bring up John Mayer and Room for Squares. I wore that album out. I loved that album. And I haven't listened to it in years and years. And I like John Mayer. I know people seem to be, I know in Adam Carolla's show, there was always this thing. It's like, John Mayer, asshole or cool? I can't tell. And I know that's the way a lot of people sort of feel about him. But regardless of your feelings on him or his music, the last couple of albums I haven't kept up with, but really for his first like four or five albums, whenever a new one would come out, I'd get it. And I'd love it. And I'd listen to it. And really, I was always a big fan.
I'll throw it out there. John Mayer was, you know, like he was the pop guy, right? So he kind of had the pop albums. And they were good albums, the first two. Mm-hmm. And then however he did it, he managed to break away from that. And by touring. And he started getting noticed by musicians as a really good guitar player and a really good singer-songwriter. And he kind of broke away from that pop image and he started doing more guitar-centric stuff. And when I really became aware of him as a guitar player was he was part of Eric Clapton's Crossroads. Yeah, the concerts that he would do. And for that, it was the John Mayer Trio. So it was him, a bass player, and a drummer. And if you pick up that album, John, or if you look that up on Spotify or something, his guitar on those tracks is absolutely amazing. And he really shines through. And that's when he got on Eric Clapton's radar. He got on B.B. King's radar. A lot of the blues guys. And he started really playing blues. You'll see that like he appears on a lot of blues albums with other people in that period. Like he does a couple songs with B.B. King. He did a couple songs with Eric Clapton. He was on the tribute album for J.J. Cale, you know, stuff like that. He did get in a little trouble though, because he started saying really stupid shit. Really stupid shit. Because he just thought, because he was hanging out with all these people and he just thought that, you know, whatever someone else said, he could say too. And I'm specifically talking about things that African Americans say. You know, they can say certain words. They own those words now. John Mayer cannot say those words.
Now, if you're a white dude from Connecticut, probably shouldn't say that. I think that the John Mayer Trio album, there's the one live album that I really liked. And
I think
that was
Crossroads.
I think that was I think that was the smartest thing he could have done for his career. And you mentioned the bass player and the drummer. So the bass player is the drummer is Steve Jordan, who worked with Keith Richards all through the 80s, amongst other things. And the bass player is Pino Palladino, who was the bass player in Who, may still be in the Who now, when John Entwistle died. So when you get the guy from the Who and the guy from the Rolling Stones, and that's your trio, pretty good. And Mayer's a really good guitar player and always played a lot live. If you, even like his pop stuff, you know, he would break out and do that stuff. But I think that was really smart because it did get him recognition from other folks and just enabled him to kind of continue to be an artist rather than chasing hits necessarily. He was able to kind of get that respect and have a live career. So even if he doesn't have another hit, he can just keep playing. I kind of feel like Sheryl Crow is sort of on the same page in terms of has a lot of respect from her peers, is a good live act, and can kind of just keep playing, although we haven't heard a lot from her lately. I feel like she has a new album out or coming out, but I feel like she was on a lot of those bills as well, even though she's not known as a guitar player.
Last thing that I remember was Steve McQueen.
Yeah, I think she did a few things after that too, but regardless, I think she had that respect as well. But it's funny that you brought up Room for Squares because I hadn't listened to that album in ages. And I was like, oh, because it's not here. Cause I was never able to rip it. And it's funny. Cause as much as I like those John Mayer records, I don't go back to them that much. Like when they came out, I loved them all and really listened to them a lot. And I guess when his new albums have come out, I've gone and revisited like the
Village,
old ones.
The Village Sessions.
But it's not. Yeah, but it's not like, say, you know, whoever my favorites are. Let's say it's Rush or the Beatles or somebody. You know, every year or however frequently, you know, it's like, well, I guess I'm going to be listening to the Beatles for the next month.
Yeah.
And you just like, you get all, and especially nowadays with all the streaming services and everything, it's like, I'll just make a playlist and I'll just put all 10 albums in there or, you know, whatever the case may be. And especially with somebody like Rush, where there's all these periods, it's like, I'm in the mood for the 80s keyboard albums. I'll put all five of those in
there.
I will say that can screw you.
Especially with the Beatles.
Oh, yeah.
Like Spotify, they now have all the Beatles on there. And I took all the Beatles albums and I put them on a playlist called the Beatles. On your phone, you can only play on shuffle. So I get in the
car
and I'm like, oh, I feel like listening to the Beatles. So I'm going to listen to the Beatles on Spotify. So, you know, I start up my Spotify. I hit the road. I'm going to be on the road for an hour because I'm driving to something in Colorado Springs. And I hit play and it's shuffle and it's Revolution number 9 on the White Album. And I have no skips. I've skipped too much.
Yes.
So I have to listen.
Okay. Oh,
I don't pay. I don't have the premium. So now I have to listen to Revolution number 9 for like 11 minutes before I can get to another song. And I'm just like, ah, fuck me.
Yeah. Well, and as much as I love the Beatles, you know, especially later on, you know, not every track is a gem on some of those later Beatles records. Like the White Album, as much as I love the White Album can probably be a single album. You know, there's a lot of weird stuff on that. And, you know, as you get a little later on, it's some of it is gets a little not as high quality as some of the other stuff. So
I will say in one of the first albums that Mayer did, and I don't remember which one, if the first one or second one, has the bonus track of the acoustic version of, I can't remember the song, but it's I Worry, I Weigh Three Times My Body, I Worry, I Roll My Fears Up.
Oh, yeah, that's a little later. Yeah.
This morning. Yeah, that song, he's doing an acoustic version of that, and he's doing it live in front of people. And I just always loved that version because he fucks up in the middle of it. And he's, you know, he starts playing, he's like, and you just, he just stops. He's like, shit. And then he keeps going, you know, because he realizes that he met, and for whatever reason, just for me personally, like, that's a moment, and I like that because it shows that, you know, even when you're polished, you can still screw up.
Yeah, there's a lot of John Mayer talk on one of these.
I'll tell you, I've been listening to a lot of different stuff lately, and it's all your fault. It's all been born from Rival Sons. So I've been doing a lot of Spotify stuff. You know, it's like, give me a playlist based on this Rival Sons song. And then I get a bunch of other stuff. And so I found groups like Hailstorm.
Yeah. Yes, I've seen you been
and
posting about
this, like,
some of these.
I like them. Their cover albums have been trippy. Like they've done a couple of cover albums and those have been really interesting. And so I've liked and I just keep going, you know, down these paths and roads and finding different songs.
Yeah. I saw like in the pretty Reckless. I saw that you were just putting them on that. Yeah. There's some good new-ish bands out there that are making really good albums. It comes up so much if ever I post anything that has anything to do with streaming or anything like that. I have some musician friends and I think this is I don't think they're necessarily wrong. I think this is a perfectly valid opinion to have, where anytime you post anything about Spotify or what have you, you know, some of my musician friends will be like, Spotify rips the artists off. They don't get paid enough. Not wrong. They're not wrong. However, I feel like, you know, the genie's already out of the bottle. It's this, you know, we can complain about, and I understand why they complain about it. I get it. I totally get it. I tend to look at the upside of it, which is that we have so much music now, and, you know, by bands that maybe are new or, you know, because of the technology being in such a way where you can record a good sounding album for much cheaper than you had to back in the day, that you can have, you could put out things independently, that these smaller record labels are putting out albums by classic bands that, you know, they're not going to get radio play, but they can still make a really good album. And to me, it's like we have this glut of great music. If you put the effort into finding,
has been for years finding new music, because for the most part, radio doesn't really play stuff that I want to listen to. They're going to play more pop stuff. No. They're going to play more commercially successful stuff, and a lot of times I just don't like that. You know, I'm definitely picky in that I like people who play instruments and. And, you know, I like real bands, not heavily produced studio kind of stuff. You know, like and it's kind of funny because a lot of people say, well, you should listen to more country. And I, for the most part, I can't. It's just a disconnect in my brain. I grew up on country. It was force fed to me. And so I really struggle to listen to country. That doesn't mean I don't respect the people who are doing country music today, because I think they are doing some great stuff and they do still play instruments and, you know, and have bands and have talented people. It's just not what I want to listen to. I do tend to lean towards, you know, rock bands. And I don't really go very heavy. I don't go death metal, that kind of stuff. You know, I'm like that. There's like a sweet spot in the middle. Like, I'll listen to blues and I'll listen to rock. I love a good guitarist. I love a good singer, you know. And so because of that, I feel like I pigeonhole myself, and it makes it really, really hard to find new music. And Spotify is one of those places where I can find new music. And because I am who I am, and to tie this back to the beginning of the conversation, you know, when I like a group, when I like an album, I will still go buy it and put it in my iTunes, you know.
That's cool. Yeah.
Just like if I like a book, if I like an author, I'll buy the book, you know, and have that physical book because I like to have it and I like to support the artist. And the only way you're going to do that is to purchase it.
Yeah. To sort of wrap up our music talk, the one thing I miss, because I don't buy physical albums anymore, I pay the $10 a month for the premium streaming service, whatever one I've been using. I do miss the liner notes. I do miss the listing of who's playing on it. And what annoys me about that is, how hard would that be to embed in the track? Why can't I like tap on my phone when there's a song I like? Why is every musician that's playing on that not listed? Why is the engineer and the producer not listed? Why isn't the lyricist not like, why that is, would be so, I don't know. I don't know anything about engineering or computer stuff like that. I can't imagine that would be a difficult thing to implement. You know, I really can't. Because I don't know how many times I'm like, who's playing that guitar solo? That sounds really good. I want to know who's playing that. Who's playing bass on this? Like, who? Like, I want to know all that stuff. And I think some people, and that's what I do miss about having physical copies, because all the albums that I loved growing up, I mean, for a time in my early 20s, there was a couple of sort of session musicians who I really liked, who if I found out they were playing on something, I would buy the album. It would be by singer-songwriters that I didn't even really know or like that much, but I'm like, oh, John Bryan's playing.
And you know, I'll say that I feel like those days are dead, like completely dead. Like the days of, there were session bands who made the albums in the 60s and the 70s. They were the ones, and people knew that they were the ones, you know, Muscle Shoals and stuff like that.
Yeah.
They knew who those people were, and they're like, oh, Muscle Shoals is on this. I gotta listen to this. I feel like that's all dead. Just all dead.
Yeah, I think that's been dead for a long time. There were players, but yeah, there were sort of like house bands that played on lots of, you know, so you mentioned Muscle Shoals. There's the Motown band. Yep. There's the Wrecking Crew, which were in LA. So yeah, there's these classic bands that played on, and I haven't watched the Muscle Shoals doc. I know that's on Netflix. That's one of those ones I got to get around to watching. The Wrecking Crew one is very good too. The one about the ones in LA, and you realize, like, I knew they were playing on a million records,
yeah,
but they played on like Frank Sinatra records and all sorts of crazy stuff. But anyway, all right. Well, everybody, hope you dug that show. We're out of time. We are talking right up to the wire here. But if you dig what we do, go over to functionalnerds.com or patreon.com/functionalnerds and consider backing us $1 a month, whatever you could do. It's extremely helpful. The people that already back us, thanks so much. We appreciate it. Patrick's got a book out. Go get it. It's called Into the Fire.
And John finally read it.
The Sam Cain book one.
Yeah.
I did. I read it and liked it. Go get it. Go get it. All right, everybody. Have a good one. We'll talk to you.
Sunsmoke. I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.